Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Welcome back, Ral, to the Lucky Die. Previously, Ral worries about the mirror. Before leaving with Lafian to perform a heist, Ral has to do a few things in Falsum. With his own death on his mind, Ral prepares for how he will get Aimer back, and how to ensure that her life will be a good one. What will the Spectres accept for Aimer's resurrection? Is the mirror going to be a survivable experience for Ral? And what exactly is Tio? I guess we're about to find out. Welcome back to the Lucky Die.
Find yourself in Falsum. It's the night before you're about to go to Beligbud and possibly go do the heist to get yourself a gem to bring back Aimer. But I feel like there's probably some things you want to do in Falsum before you head off. So, Ral, what do you want to do?
Well, we have a million things to prepare now. So, I need to go do a couple of things.
Okay.
I have a shopping list, sort of.
Oh boy. Well, we have some time, so we can go through your shopping list. So I feel like Rao's vacation is going to be less of a vacation, more of a, well, this is going to be an exhausting night.
Yeah. He's not really got anything that he's looking forward to. Well, I don't know. He needs to talk to Spectre, and he's always excited to talk to Spectre. But he needs to talk first to his Tabaxi friend. He needs to talk to his Tabaxi friend and see if his Tabaxi friend has medicines and potions to help him get through the...
Okay. Your Tabaxi friend, because it's basically going to be like night, evening. He's in like, he's where you normally find your Tabaxi friend, and they are currently kind of like packing down for the evening, I guess. They're beginning to put some of their ingredients away and like make sure that their pestle and mortar is all clean and all of their knives and stuff. So that's how you find them.
Okay. I don't know how we communicate with each other.
They look at you and they wave. There's no smile. It's just a wave and a nod. I like the idea that this is the grumpiest tabaxi in the world and you've made friends with him. Yeah, he waves.
We could use a favor. We're going to be doing dangerous things. I need things for pain, and we're going to need a lot of potions. We will buy them. I could pay for them.
They look at you and like they tip their head a little bit, and you see their whiskers like kind of like flex a little bit, and then they say, "No pay. What pain? Where?"
Raw gestures to his acid, kind of.
They nod. Yeah.
Acid, basically, when I get upset or scared, I can pass out. I think I'm going to be alone. Raul is like kind of looking down and shuffling his feet, not excited about the idea of being alone somewhere scary.
No pain or no, he seems to be struggling to find the word. Stop. No. No pain or no barrier. Or yes, barrier. He kind of like gestures to your face and then like runs like his paws down his face like he's drooling, and he puts a hand under it and then continues like drooling over the top of his hand, and then he's like smiles.
I don't really know what he's trying to say.
As Raul continues to look confused, he kind of like looks around, and he dives into like his bag and collection of his stuff, and he pulls out this like scrap of cloth, and he kind of like waves it at you and like dangles his like moves his fingers, paws around it, and like tries to make it look like the they're indicating that the cloth is like magic, even though it's not. And then he kind of like puts it up to your face, and then he does like the drooling motion over the top of the cloth.
Oh. I mean, sure, something like that would be nice. But it's kind of a lot on the inside, too, not just outside. And Rob puts his hand on his chest and kind of gestures.
He kind of like puts his like paw like maybe like half an inch above your scales, like in the area you're indicating, and you see him like frown and like scratch his eyebrow just behind his ear, and he's like, "Barrier for heart."
Raul nods and looks kind of excited. Like that sounds maybe like something.
he nods and he says, "Only for little hour." And he looks like he's definitely unsure how to say what he said.
Raul nods. "Yeah, that should be fine. I hope that we're out of there in an hour."
He nods and says, "Big time with creating. But yes, little time barrier hut."
"Okay. That might help. Just let us know what you need. We have how much time?"
You don't actually know how to open it, but you're going to be gone for like 4 days.
"Yeah. We won't need it for another 4 days, or at least. But that's it.
5 days, 5 sun, 5 days.
"Okay. That would help. Thank you.
Have Question need of you later.
Okay. Is everything okay?
He nods. All okay, but have question need of you later.
Okay, of course.
They smile and say, no pay, you go, I make barrier heart.
Ra gives him a hug.
he seems really awkward, and then he hugs you in that kind of like still trying to feel what the fuck a scales are, because this is super weird for him. Gives you like a hearty pat on the back, and then like pulls out some of his potion ingredients and his things again and his potion books. So he seems to be getting on with it. There will be something for you in 5 days.
Woo, that might help.
But it is only temporary. And if you hadn't picked up, you owe him a favor.
Yeah.
Okay, I better add this to my notes. All right, so your tabaxi friend, you owe a favor too. I hope that's at least one item ticked off your list.
Yes.
I'm not going to say it might be the most useful thing in the world you've ever just obtained for the easiest thing in the world, or it might be the most useless thing. You'll just have to find it when you get to it.
Well, I mean, not a lot can hurt. I think he'll try anything at this point, especially mm-hmm. to get through something
yeah.
potentially intense. So,
okay. So where to?
Ral's going to find a quiet space to do okay. his specter.
Well, the mirror room, the room with the death chair, the room where you guys do your meetings, although your meetings, so maybe that may be used sometimes. The temple is usually, well, not usually, it's always quiet, but there's usually people there. Or you can just walk on the surface. Like, there are plenty of places. Where do you want to go?
I don't think Ra has much of a reason to go up to the surface right now. I'll go to the mirror room.
Okay. The kind of four guards on duty, the ones that are all kind of like really squished in there now because you asked for security on the door. they part to let you through. You've already seen the mirror. You're of no threat to yourself. Well, no, you are. You're out, but yeah. The mirror room is empty. Yeah, the curtain, the cloth is still up over the top of it, and the armor stand is more than half full.
Okay. Ra's going to kind of whisper out loud. All right, Spectre, I've got something to ask. I'm going to... let me see if I can make it over there. And Ra closes his eyes. And focus is really hard to get to the stalking plane.
Okay. There is a lot of concentration had. As much as you are trying to get over there, your body pulls you through. Like, it's just 7 days is enough, man. You're charged to do this. Yeah, you find yourself on the stalking in the mirror room. You haven't been randomly pulled off to a different part of the stalking. You're exactly where you are on the physical plane, but in the stalking. And you see your spectre kind of like sitting cross-legged, almost opposite you.
Hey, spectre, I have a couple of questions. Maybe you could give me a little more time.
Sure.
And he kind of reaches out and he says,
just before you go back, I'll keep you here. It's not a pleasant experience. So what's up, Ral?
Hi.
Hi.
So you might have overheard a lot of what we're doing. Do you know how to get in this? What is on the other side? What this is, you seem to know a lot about. Well, you knew about the chair, and that was related to something death, and then this thing is too.
Yes. The gods that created this temple.
And he kind of looks around at the mirror room, but you think he's indicating the temple.
Was created by a group of gods. Each of them had a different way of protecting it, a different way of making it a useful place to start. Mirkul protected one of the pieces of Monarch. That's what's through this mirror. But I am honor bound by my allegiance to them not to say how.
Oh, okay.
But as he says that, not that skeletons can wink, but you kind of get that distinct impression that something's going on as he puts a hand over your chest and then pulls it away again.
I'm sure I'll figure out what that means. what do I need to give up to bring Aima back? Is memories going to be enough?
Well, your memories of Daemerius, of the whole experience there, they would all go. Which means you would only remember from the moment you lost sight of Daemerius. Your childhood would be gone. But you would know that you knew things. The facts would stay the same. You know that you met Aima. You know that Hagen was a friend. You would know you were treated badly. You just wouldn't remember them.
That could be good and bad.
Yes. What exactly you would know, I couldn't tell you. I don't know if you'd remember that Thorin was Aemon's father, or whether you would remember, or know, rather, that Aemon was who she was to him. It's dangerous. It could help you in the long run. It could help some of all this.
And he kind of like puts a finger up to your kind of like nose, like where it's kind of like in the real world, it would be drooling a little bit.
It might help with some of that. But otherwise you would remember nothing.
That's fine though, because when Nima's back, she can help us get through back to Daemerius to get the thing from Rolanwa.
Yeah.
She knows Daemerius better than me anyways. She would be a better guide anyhow.
I think that would be enough, Rol.
Okay. Okay, good.
I will make sure that I am reassigned to her if and when it comes up.
He kind of gives you that look of, he's going to do something dodgy again.
Oh, no. Well, don't get yourself in trouble.
What am I going to do? Be promoted again?
And he has a moment of laughter and then a moment of, oh shit.
How's Theo doing?
And he has a smile on his face.
Theo's fine. Thank you. Theo's great. He's very nice.
Helping at least.
Yes. Is Teof, is he like magic or?
Yes, he is. He is a natural inhabitant of the Stalking.
Okay.
He is magical.
Okay. That's fun. Yeah, Tia's been great.
He can do some surprising things. So don't freak out if he does something unusual.
Okay, I'll try not to be so surprised.
He reaches out and he grabs hold of your wrists as you feel yourself kind of slipping back to the material plane, but he pulls you through. It is like someone has gotten a block of ice and just put it against your scales. But he's holding on and keeping you here. He says,
"There is one thing I have to tell you."
Sure.
There are spirits that are passing through now that talk of darkness being called, of being summoned. It's a fair bet to say the Blissful Eclipse, but it's something more. They say they're going to pull enough for the living and the dead. I'm trying to carefully get some information about what this means.
You probably know by now that's way out of some of what I would know anything about.
I know.
That sounds bad.
But I feel like some of your companions may hear about it soon.
Okay.
Just be careful of the dark spirits when they turn up. They will feel familiar to you, but they will not be friendly. Be careful, Raoul.
What do you mean, dark spirits?
The spirits that are talking about this are talking as if they're bringing the Blissful Eclipse here. That there is enough for everyone. It's only small details. I'm trying to piece everything together. But just be careful if something shadowy turns up that shouldn't be there. No matter how good or familiar it feels.
Okay. I'll let everyone know. Thank you.
Good luck, Raoul.
He smiles.
Raoul gives a hug, of course. Yes, the hug specter.
Of course. They hug, and it's literally like hugging death as you go back through to the physical plane. Like hugging death, but that's okay for Raoul because they're besties.
Yeah.
Okay. Tick, we spoken to the spectre.
Yeah.
And you have, does Raoul feel better or does he feel worse?
For having talked to spectre?
Yeah.
I think he feels better because he's more confident that he can bring Aima back and still be helpful in some way without having to give up anything physical. Because he doesn't have a whole lot.
He doesn't have a whole lot left.
And it would be, it's a thin line between like him being useful and him being a huge burden in another way, which is already saying a lot. So I think he's relieved that like he can still.
Yeah. He's not going to be a husk of a dragonborn. Yeah. That's good. Like, so Raoul's basically almost on his way to getting Aima back now. Like, he's just got to go get the gem and, you know, hope that, your friend Emil Scott has good words when he returns. Okay, so you still have the rest of the evening. Let's say it's like the equivalent of midnight in this world. What do you want to do?
Well, since I'm already here, I wanted to do this last, but he would probably go look for the Dragonborn.
Okay. The Dragonborn is staying in the barracks area. You notice that some of Savras's army, the kind of bigger, bulkier, and some of the definitely magically powerful ones, are kind of conveniently in beds near to him. They're keeping an eye on his every move. But yeah, for now, the Dragonborn is... let's say that they are sitting up reading something. Oh, let's say they're reading like a common phrase book. They're trying to figure out how to speak common.
Fair.
Okay.
Raw enters and quietly sits, I guess, on an adjacent bed in the barracks.
Oh, yeah.
And avoids eye contact for a minute, trying to gather up the, I guess, courage, or just, you know, swallow down the fact that he's has to have this conversation.
Yeah. When you finally look up, the Dragonborn has closed the book, put it down next to them, and they're like sitting, there's this kind of sitting, leaning forward a little bit with their arms crossed and just staring at you. They're just waiting.
You finding what you're looking for?
I know how to ask to go upstairs.
What do you need upstairs?
And to the bakery. But these are not useful phrases right now.
What phrase do you need to know?
When your friends say that they have the last piece, I very much want to go home.
I mean, I doubt that they would just leave you here. Right?
I do as we run our commands. If I am to stay here, then I will stay here. That is my job. And he stares at you. That is my duty.
Sure. Do you recognize the name Ama?
I have heard of many Amas. Be a little more specific.
Thorin's daughter.
Yes, I have heard of her.
She should be here. But she's not right now.
Where can I find her? At least then I can talk to somebody sensible.
I'm going to be bringing her back here.
And I can go get her. Where?
She died.
Oh, you are to pass. They have told me here that you can bring people back when they die. That there are...
That's what I hear, too.
Afterlives.
There are. I've seen them.
This does not make sense to me.
When I bring her back, I want her to have the option to go home. Maybe she could take you home.
I will take her home with me if she wants to return. Thorin was never the same after she ran away.
Ra kind of looks down. Well,
I just want that to be an option for her. She shouldn't have to be here anymore. If she doesn't want to be. She has no reason to be.
As you know, we don't have a concept of what to do with someone brought back from the dead. With Athorin's views, I think that she would still be accepted. She is a fighter who continues to fight after she has died.
Yeah, she's still fighting, doing all of that.
That is something to aspire to. I would make sure that she is accepted and try to explain as best as I can what this afterlives are. It would be good we could use her.
Sure. Well, you'll have to talk to her about all that when she gets back.
Of course.
Good to hear that she has options, though.
You are not coming back.
Well, I'm not really accepted, am I?
No.
No.
It was not a question.
Not like I'm going to last long enough to give a shit anyways.
You are a dead man walking, but I have heard you have done many good things despite being what you are.
You act like I chose to do this. You act like this could not be you. This could not have been you.
He shakes his head and he says, "This would not have been me.
I would have been you. I knew a lot of people who thought the same. I thought the same. They kept wheeling them in one after another and they would all just die the same.
Yeah.
They all thought they had purposes and to do all the bullshit that you are here doing. This and that for Rwanda or Athorin. I wanted to do things. I thought I wanted to help do fighting and this and that. I wanted to learn. It's not like I gave up on you." And Rawl gets up and starts to leave. He's kind of done with this.
He makes moves to go after you and he says, "Just answer my one question, please."
"What?"
"Why do you keep fighting even though you know you are going to die? We thought there was nothing else to live after. Why do you keep fighting?"
"When Aima died, I did not keep fighting. And then I found out all of the things that I know now. And here I am again."
"You fight for love."
"I'm fighting for a lot of things right now. But yes, it's always been that way. Right now I'm fighting for life too."
He nods, like very slowly, as if he's coming to an understanding of his own. He says, "I have seen these people do incredible things with healing magics. I hope they can find something for you so you can come home."
Rawl kind of gives him a really curious look, kind of a little bit softer of a look.
"I fight for love too. I have left my family behind in Demarius. I understand. I understand you now, I think. But also understand, I am going to bed. This is too much common today." And he turns around and goes to bed.
Okay. Yeah, Rob will still leave. I think that he could talk more about, like, the fact that he's going to forget a lot about Demarius and not be able to assist any further after this, but he doesn't really, he's not in a talking mood, and Ama will kind of take care of a lot of that talking. Once she comes back. And this is about the Demarius stuff.
Yeah, that's how.
They can do the rest of this nonsense talking later.
All of that talking shit, someone else can do that.
Yeah.
Okay. As you leave the barracks, you see a young human boy, a young halfling boy, and you see kind of a late teenager girl sneaking out from the area where they build and where they create and where the forge is. You seem just kind of like peeking their head out and just like sneaking out really quietly, hoping nobody will notice them in the passage of people going around.
Raul was like leaving the room. And then he kind of dips back in, probably getting a weird look from the other Dragonborn, but not really paying any attention at all. And he puts his senses into Tio and follows them.
Okay, can I have Tio make a stealth roll, please?
Yes.
Ah, oh, that's so beautiful, Neil.
No, Neil.
Fuck it. It's just too funny that you had nat 20 on that. Like the silent creature from the stalking that he is, Tio asks Tio to follow them. And Tio flies up to the ceiling, flips up and begins to walk very slowly along the ceiling, just flexing their wings a little bit. You have this weird kind of bird's eye view down on what's going on. It's very easy from up here to follow the three children. Like, it's ridiculously easy. You see them sneaking out. They have something that they have in a bag, and they've kind of like, they keep shuffling it between them. When they think someone's looking at them, they make sure they move their bodies in a way that they hide this bag of things. The three of them, very, very sneakily for the three of them, managed to sneak their way out of the temple, past where Guardian and Claws are, past where some people are talking and chatting or sparring in that kind of entrance way. They sneak out through the door and they make their way along that very long corridor with bands of colours, bands of traps. They're dormant now. They've been dormant for a while. And they sneak their way into the sewers. Are you continuing to follow them in tier? Are you letting them know what's going on?
Raul's going to catch up on foot a ways because I'm not sure that he is very confident with the range that he has with Tio. Uh-huh. And also, he doesn't want Tio to get too far from him because you know, he doesn't want Tio to get hurt. So
I'm going to say it's very easy for you to catch up. Yeah, to be fair, once you get into that very long corridor, there's nowhere for them to hide and there's nowhere for you to hide. So as soon as anyone looks, you're both rumbled. I'm going to say for the sake of brevity, it's probably about halfway along this corridor that these kids notice they're being followed. Uncle Raul! And like Taylor's like moves in such a way that she hides the bag behind her and the two boys are doing the same. They're like taking it from her and like moving it behind them. You've already seen the bag, you know it's here, so it's obvious to you.
What are you doing?
What are you doing, Uncle Raul?
Keeping an eye on some kids that look kind of suspicious. What are you doing?
Oh, and they look at each other and Rondi looks up and says, I guess we're being suspicious. We're making something. Taylor's is making something. Don't rumble me. Just be honest. It's Raul. Okay, fine. We're making something that might help, but we don't want to tell anyone in case it doesn't help.
And you're being careful.
They look at each other. Rondi, like, tugs Talus's, like trouser leg and, like, gives her a look. And she's like, well, we're trying. But we got caught leaving, so I guess not very good.
What are you doing? What are you looking for?
Okay, we'll show you, but you have to promise not to tell anyone else in case it doesn't work.
Okay, that's fine. I just want to make sure you don't need help.
Okay. She, like, between the three of them, they open up the bag and you make your way closer, and she pulls out this stack of cards. They have...
Raw gives her a look, like, those... because he knows. He heard the card about the card trick, yeah. Right? He just, like, flat,
yeah,
like,
heard about that.
Flat blank expression, like, just looks at her.
She pulls them out and she kind of, like, spreads them in her hands, and you can see that on each of the cards they have, like, a very formal, like, gold-looking border. But across them there are charcoal drawings. Now, some of these drawings are clearly done by someone who is much more practiced at artistry than these three kids. It's definitely the work of, like, a master drawer. Some of them are a lot more childish. Some of them are clearly drawn by the three children. But you kind of look through them, and at a glance, some of them are shiny and are thus, preserved. Some of them are still kind of... taking shape. They're still not magical yet. But what really strikes you is that you recognize a lot of the people drawn on these cards. So, we were working on how to put, like, things into cards. They're not the cards that I was using before, because Daddy told me off for those, and he said he doesn't ever, ever want me to do them again. But I said I have to at some point, because I think they're going to be really important and powerful things. But he's right, I probably shouldn't do them until I know what I'm doing a bit better. So I thought I'd work on some different cards. And these have people on them. And, I'm still trying to make it work, and I can only make Rondi's and Zach's and mine's work, and I can't make anyone else's work, and I can't figure out why.
These, you're not going to age again, are you?
No, silly. I mean, if... And Rondi, like, looks at her and he says, if we do one... we'll show him one, and then we'll just do this again tomorrow. We'll try again tomorrow. Just show him. And Zach, like, nods at her. Okay, so this one is me. And she pulls up a picture that which clearly someone else has drawn of Talus, and it's her as a kid, and she has, like, really big, like, pigtails. Like, they're just huge. And it's drawn in charcoal. And she says... so this one has my name on it, and you can see it's, like, written in like a very young person's handwriting. So this is me, and I have pigtails. And she throws the card forward, and what appears when it hits the deck is a 10-foot version of Talus. She holds in her hands a series of cards, and as she throws them forward, you hear, like, a small explosion going off as it hits the wall, and you see that part of the wall, as you look, has been shattered and destroyed. And then the 10-foot Talus disappears. I can do that with Rondi and with Zach, but I don't know how to make anyone else's work. Can you help?
Okay, I don't really know a whole lot about all of this. But if you have any ideas, sure.
You see, Zach, like, tugging on her waist, and she bends down to listen to him. And she, like, looks at him, and he nods, like, emphatically, like, this is what he thinks. And she looks at you and she says, Zach thinks that if you, like... let me find the real one. And she, like, goes through it, and she pulls out what looks like a very good drawing of you. This is, like, a level of drawing beyond these kids. And she presents it to you. And it has the gold border, but it's not preserved. There's no written name on it. It's nothing like that. And she's like, so Zach thinks maybe if you sign it and maybe, I don't know, say something, that maybe we can make it work. And she hands it over to you.
Rourke kind of looks at it and like, kind of like, he's never like seen a picture of himself before. It's like weird that this is a thing.
It's a really good drawing of you. So it's like semi-realistic. Yeah, it also looks kind of scary, but the kids don't seem at all scared of you. So like, yeah. Like if you showed this to a normal kid, they'd be like, meh. Like these aren't normal kids. These kids are seeing some shit.
Yeah. Okay. Who did this?
Daddy drew it.
Oh.
So when we ran out of the mirror room last time, I had an idea and I asked Daddy if he could draw all of you because he's a really good drawer, and now that he's not quite so old anymore, his hands don't shake, and he didn't think I knew that his hands were shaking, but I did. And I saw that they weren't shaking anymore, and I asked him to draw everyone, and he did. And he drew you.
Wow. Okay, and you think I need to sign this?
Yeah, but if this works, please don't tell anyone why I asked them to sign their pictures, because I want it to be a surprise.
Okay. Just don't, no trouble, no troublemaking.
And
he tries to give a spin look. But they know he's just confused and trying to just say, don't hurt anything.
I'll tell you what, I would decide what kind of, like, either intimidation or persuasion I will let you choose. This is parenting.
They're both the same. So I'll do the nicer then one.
We will call it the parenting check.
21.
21 at parenting, huh? they kind of like look down and you see like Zach just do that thing where like his feet makes a circle whilst he's looking down, his hands behind his back. You see Rondi like he's adulting. You know the look of him when he's being a leader and he's accepting that he has to do something he doesn't want to do. And Taylor just like looks out and out disappointed. And she's just like, okay, I promise not to use them randomly for things or to get into too much trouble.
Fine. Do you have a pen or something?
Uh-huh. And she kind of like goes into her bag and she pulls out a quill and an ink. Ink is supposed to just be like a flat, normal color. This one's definitely glowing and shifting inside like a thick fluid.
He gives them the look like, of course this is... of course this is weird.
it's magic, Uncle Raoul. Wait, just... please sign it.
Fine.
Okay.
Hesitantly signs it.
You see her kind of like take the card back, and as she does, she kind of blows over it, and you see this kind of like faint pink and purple like particles of light land on it from her breath, and you see that it preserves over it, and you see the two boys just go nuts next to her, like, ah, we did it, sort of thing. She's like, I'm gonna give it a try. I'm really good at hugs. And she throws it forward and you see a tempered version of Raoul appear, who kind of smiles down at you all. I need you to know that the tempered version of Raoul, you don't really, you know, you've seen yourself in a mirror, you know you're quite scary, you know that you can be very intimidating, but this version of Raoul just exudes something comfortable. It's not scary, it's just, I don't know, beautiful in its own terrifying way. And you see the Raoul turn up, smile and wave at them, and you see them lifting their arms up to punch things, realize there's nothing to punch, and then he disappears. All the kids just rush over and hug you and high five each other.
Raoul hugs back. but is okay, equally confused at the magic.
So when you come back, I will need you to sign another one, but please don't tell anyone else, because I just want to, in case, like, I can't get them all to work, and I know some of them, well, the old ones I did, they kind of just stood there and did nothing, and that was really useless, and I don't want to be useless. So please don't tell anyone.
Okay.
Okay.
Just be careful.
We will, Uncle Rel. Of course. We'll make sure we behave. And then Zach just kind of like waves, and the three kids just bolt back into the temple. Complete disregard of the fact they were trying to sneak out.
Yeah. Are we in the sewers? Yeah.
Yeah, you're kind of in that long corridor that you get to just before you get into the sewers.
Okay. And then it's probably the same distance or whatever to go, because Raul wanted to see if Bilgrim was around. It's probably the same distance back or forward, so he'll just go through the sewers, I guess, since we're already in the sewer.
Yeah, like you're sewer adjacent, you might as well go check there that way. You make your way back through the sewers. Most of like the kind of the pathways that would lead to the temple itself have been like cleaned up. It's clearly been used as a passage now. You pass the place where you met the orc priest that time with the children, and you find the exit into the earth dark tunnel that houses the fourfold. You make your way to where Bogrim's rooms are, and he is not there.
Okay. I'm trying to think of where else he, not to look for Bogrim, but what else he like has to do. I don't think he has anything to do. He could go talk to Caden.
Yeah, you could grass the kids up. That'd be That's good. That's good. Yeah, I can make that work. I can make that work. All right.
Just after discovering that Bogrim,
after you discover Bogrim isn't where Bogrim is supposed to be, you make your way back to the temple, and it's like, I'm going to say like 2 a.m. now. It's like really late. There are very few people up and about now. As you check in into the barracks as to where Caden is, where you would assume he'd be, you see that the kids are just all sparked out in their various places. You notice that Rosita and Zach's kind of like sleeping area, their beds and bunks are much closer to Caden and Taylor's than they were like before. They seem to have performed like a odd little family unit now. And you see that Rondi's just off talking to some people. You do notice, however, Caden is awake. He's just kind of like reading through some things by candlelight.
Raul goes over and like sits down next to him.
He smiles and like reaches over and gives you a hug.
Yeah, Raul hugs him. I don't think he has like a whole lot to say, you know? It's just like good company to have.
Yeah. He kind of like, he does that thing where he looks around, he reaches under the bed and like pulls out something like comfortable to drink, pours a beer for himself and like some nice tasting, kind of like a fruity drink for Raul. so he kind of like hands that over and begins to drink. And he says, I went back to my home. It's not there, but I found some things. I thought maybe you could make use of this. Punching's not my game anymore. And he kind of like, in the same box he pulled his beer and your kind of like fruity drink out of, he pulls out a kind of a big bag. It's quite heavy and it's got a lot of material in there. It's clearly protecting whatever the heavy item is. And he says, I don't know if they'll fit, but they might, they're magic, so they might change for your hands. Or your feet.
Raul like cocks his head. Curious.
So my when I married Taylor's mom, I Her father gave them to me to help protect our family and well I'm long gone for the punchy game now but they allow you to hurt a little harder for the people that you care about. And he gives you the bag.
Rom takes a second and kind of gives Caden a second glance and kind of like hesitant, or not hesitant, but you know, meekly, I guess, yeah. Opens the bag and pulls out what's inside.
Inside, you see a pair of bronze knuckle dusters. They are heavily etched with dwarven and magical runes. They glint and they shimmer. There is definitely a magical something around them. And as you kind of like turn them over in your hand, you can feel them stretching and shifting and making themselves correct for the next user. And he says, Caden says, I know that you don't think you're much for this world much longer, but if anything happened, you'd look after her, right? And he looks at Talis, who's asleep in the bed opposite.
As long as I can, yes. Of course.
So you have these if you make sure she's okay if I'm gone.
If you're gone, are you okay?
I'm fine, but I realized that I almost died for being old, and we as a group almost keep dying. I don't want to leave her without someone. I would die to save her, but she's still a kid. She's not 17. She's 7.
As long as I'm here, I will look out for her.
Thanks. And he kind of like clinks his glass against yours and keeps drinking.
Raw like gives him a hug.
And Raw's a bit emotional. Like, he's
he is also. He gives you that really like strong hug that like doesn't break away for a while. He's upset, but he's also very happy that you are going to help him. Well, more help Taylor. She's the important one. We all know this. We all know Taylor is the most important person in this podcast. Okay, I'm about to release something to you in the handouts. Okay, you have a set of knuckle dusters called Dam. It's a +1 weapon.
Ooh,
as a bonus action, you can use the command phrase death by any means necessary, Dam. The target of your attack becomes your sworn enemy until it dies or until the dawn 7 days later. You can only have one sworn enemy, and when your sworn enemy dies, you can just choose another one after the next day. You cannot change your sworn enemy unless they die or 7 days later.
Right.
When you make a melee attack action with this weapon against your sworn enemy, you have advantage on the roll. In addition, you ignore any resistance they have against the type of damage dealt by this weapon. And if the attack hits, your sworn enemy takes an extra 1d8 slashing.
What the fuck? Holy shit. You realize that's going to stack like crazy with divine flavor.
No, Neil. Call it divine flavor. Yes, I know. I'm very well aware. I know that I am giving you guys a lot of power spikes at the moment, but I don't really give you guys anything else.
Matter.
So I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm totally fine.
Cool. Those are crazy. Holy shit.
There you go.
Hi, everyone. We're all here. Thank you so much for listening to the show. It means so much. If you've not yet had the chance to swing by our website, please go visit our website at luckydie.com. We just put a lot of work into revamping that. It's looking very good.
Special thanks to patron Cody Ramsey for being a supporter of the show. Your support means a whole lot to us. Thank you. We have lately had some people finding out about the show via word of mouth from their friends. Thank you so much. We appreciate that. If you've not left a review yet, that helps a lot of people too. It helps us know what we're doing right, what you like to hear from us, and it helps other people find us too. So that would greatly help as well. So thanks so much to everyone who supports the show. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week for the rest of our vacations. Bye.
Are you tired of the domestic discussions of the more pedestrian podcasts? Looking for a more enlightened way to talk about video games? Then look no further than Left Trigger, Right Trigger, the video game book club, where four hosts discuss the more sophisticated issues in games. Topics include
his body parts,
Zelda,
The Division,
Hyperlight Tokyo Drifter,
Good Vibes,
Time Machine,
Doing the Gab, Biscuit Faces,
Being Terrible,
Muzipan Sex Dance,
The Faces Are Terrible,
When the Mouse Is Away, or When the Cat's a Mouse,
I Can't Tell White People Apart,
My Body Is Going to Dissolve, I'm Playing Wine,
The Gashapon Is Just a Womb.
Man, this game's got hot orcs.
Left Trigger, Right Trigger, your video game book club.
Wow, that was really disappointing.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.